and conductors of our time. Described by NPR Music as a pianist with an extraordinary and instantly recognizable style, Pariah has performed in the major international music centers with every leading orchestra. After more than 35 years on the concert stage, Pariah is one of the most sought-after and cherished pianists of our time. Monday, October 29th at the Broward Center. Tickets at 954-462-0222 or browardcenter.org.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with co-host Bonnie Berman. Are you prepared for any storm activity, Bonnie?
I think so.
Well, very good.
What about you?
I'm taken care of, I think. Well, the Miami Foundation seeks to foster a stronger sense of community and advance quality of life in our region. Joining us now is Javier Soto. He's the president and CEO of the foundation. Welcome to you, Javier. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much for having us today.
We're also joined by Dr. Ned Murray. He's the associate director of the Florida International University Metropolitan Center. And welcome to you, Dr. Ned Murray.
Thank you, Joseph. Good to see you again.
Javier Soto, tell us about our Miami, soul of the city. Give us a thumbnail of what's up with it.
Well, the Miami Foundation, as the Community Foundation for Greater Miami, takes a long view on our community. And we work with philanthropists who share a passion for Miami and who also take a long view on our community, our community's future. So our Miami is, in essence, a community indicator project, or a report card, if you will, to the community on how we're doing on certain different measures. And it's something that we hope to measure over time to see how we are doing and the things that we need to improve for our community's future.
So what does community indicator mean? You've done interviews, I suppose. Is that what it?
Well, we actually have partnered with Knight Foundation, who has conducted significant public research around the issue of what connects people to their community, what they like about it, what attaches them to those communities. That research was called Soul of the Community. And they did that in Miami and 25 other communities around the country. And what we've done is that we've layered statistical data on top of that public opinion research. And that is, in essence, what the Our Miami Project is. It's a combination of the public opinion research that Knight Foundation did and the statistical research on the same categories that FIU's Metropolitan Center worked on with us.
Okay, so we want to get back to this, of course, but Dr. Ned Murray, what is the Florida International University Metropolitan Center and what is your involvement with Our Miami?
The Metropolitan Center at Florida International University was created 15 years ago, around 1997. Our mission is to assist local governments, policymakers, community-based organizations, and in their decision-making process, looking at various public policy issues, particularly economic and social issues. We've done studies on affordable housing, transportation, economic development, poverty and race, and they're typically very data intensive. And I think that was the match between us and the foundation when they needed community indicators that would help them provide those objective measures that could be utilized as part of this project. And my involvement, I'm the associate director, but I was the project manager on this particular initiative as well.
Okay, so you're working hand in hand.
That's right.
With Our Miami and with the Miami Foundation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Dr. Murray, you're also an expert on affordable housing in Miami-Dade. What efforts have been made to alleviate that problem?
Well, it's an issue that we've been studying since the bubble. In fact, we predicted in the studies we were doing back then in Miami-Dade and Broward and Palm Beach that bubble was going to burst. There were issues relative to affordability, the rising levels of cost burden households, the fact that wages were not keeping pace with the rise in housing costs. Those issues are starting to come back, even though affordable housing is not as out of reach as it was, say, 5 years ago. Those issues are still there. Rents have gone up considerably, and we're starting to see increases in both single-family homes and condominium prices. And given the wages, given the typical median incomes that we see here in Miami-Dade and elsewhere, that there are those affordability gaps that are coming back. What's being done? Certainly there are various organizations in place, various partnerships that have been in place now, not only here in Miami-Dade, but in Broward and Palm Beach, that have been working on these issues, since 2005, and we continue to work with them in updating their various studies and updating various reports that they use to support their various programming.
Are there fewer people underwater in their mortgages in our region than before?
It's still substantially high, and the level of cost burden is rising as well, particularly as it relates to rents. Household income has gone down over the last few years, and obviously housing prices have continued to rise, particularly rents. And of course, a lot of the workforce, particularly the workforce here in Miami and South Florida, their wages are essentially at 80% or less than the area median income. So obviously cost burden is a big issue for them. And as rents rise, then obviously that puts them in a more difficult situation.
You mentioned transportation. Don't you feel Miami needs a better and more efficient transportation center and system in order to thrive as an urban center? I'll ask that to, whoever wants to take it.
Absolutely. There's no question that the mobility challenge is one that we need to address as a community in order to be successful into the future. One of the key takeaways for us from the Our Miami project is the need to develop, retain, and recruit our local talent. And when you talk about young local talent, recent college graduates, young professionals, et cetera, issues around affordability of housing, mobility, and the ease of commuting are very key issues. So right. From a policy perspective, from a grant-making perspective, the Miami Foundation is interested in helping to find solutions to those issues into the future.
And go ahead.
You've studied this very much, but what really drives a community's vibrancy? What makes it work and be vibrant and prosperous?
Well, in the case of Miami, I think something that drives Miami's vibrancy is its openness. And that's one of the categories.
And diversity?
Absolutely, diversity. And that's part of openness, where people from different places feel welcome here. So how open we are, how welcoming we are, these are things that we looked at in this study in the Our Miami project. And I think they are a key ingredient to Miami's success in the past and certainly Miami's success in the future. A challenge is to create greater cohesion, certainly, within the community, within the various segments of the community. But the fact that in Miami you can arrive today and through hard work and perseverance, you can probably get very, very far without any artificial barriers in front of you. Whereas I think in places that are more entrenched or have perhaps are older and have some of these artificial barriers around, you know, where you went to school and who your social networks are, et cetera, I don't think that exists in Miami. I think Miami is a very open place, open to people with an entrepreneurial spirit, and people can be successful here.
How did Miami fare among the 26 centers that were studied in the Knight survey? How did Miami fare?
Well, in some categories, we do better than others, and in some, not so much. But it wasn't necessarily a ranking of all 26.
Okay.
But by category, I will tell you that what attaches people to Miami is actually the same as what attaches people in Philadelphia or San Jose or around the country. And those are issues around the aesthetics of a place, of the openness that we just discussed. Education is important as well. So there are a couple of key drivers, no matter where you are, that help to attach people to that community.
Evidently, we didn't do so well in the community involvement area. Is that right?
That's correct. Civic engagement, while not something that is critical to attaching people to community necessarily, we do rank very poorly in that, and perhaps is a reflection of the fact that folks maybe haven't been here for as long.
Right.
There are a number of factors that probably play into that, but the bottom line is that civic engagement does drive a number of other issues such as leadership, for example. I mean, we feel very strongly that driving citizen participation through voting rates, through participation in public meetings, et cetera, will help to foster and create a greater level of leadership around the entire community.
So what are some tangible things that you can do to further the civic engagement? I mean, what are the tangibles that you're working on?
This project is part of a broader effort by the Miami Foundation to help inform and engage people in the community around issues of public policy. So we do put information out on a regular basis. We convened last year, for example, around the mayoral election. We convened all the candidates who ran in the first round and the second round. So informing people and reminding them of the importance of getting involved is one way. Through our Miami website, we also will help facilitate volunteerism, which is another key component of civic engagement. So we want to do that as well. But really just raise awareness and also raise attachment, increase attachment rather, to this community, because we do believe that more attached people also end up being more civically engaged people in their communities.
I see. I'm just thinking that because of we're always known as such a transient community, that has a lot to do with why we don't score so high in the civic engagement.
That historically has absolutely been a factor. But I really believe that Miami is changing. And I think that aspect of this community is changing. I think for a long time, Miami was a place where people came to with the idea that eventually they would be going back somewhere else.
Right.
Even if it was for burial. They'd be going back for burial wherever they came from, or they'd be going back after there had been a change in government in the place that they came from. I think that's changing. I think particularly this young, creative, talented core of Miamians are people who see Miami as their home and don't see any other option and don't see any other alternative to going somewhere else. I think this is where they want to raise their families and where they want to create their businesses and be forever.
We're speaking about the Miami Foundation with Javier Soto and Dr. Ned Murray. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Good afternoon. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center, 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life.
The Alper JCC Jewish Book Festival, ongoing through November 8th, features short story writer Nathan Englander, British author Francesca Siegel, Women's Day with screenwriter Delia Ephron, and Politico's Lloyd Constantine and Ira Shapiro. Tickets, locations, and a complete schedule of author events are available at 305-271-9000 or online at alperjcc.org. That's 305-271-9000 or alperjcc.org. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, Bechtel Jewelers, Cleveland Orchestra, and Nacional Funeral Homes. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. If you'd like to join in our conversation about the Miami Foundation and its studies, that's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. Dr. Murray of FIU, tell us more about nationwide the middle class seems to be shrinking, but it seems to be in South Florida. There's a very two-tiered economic system. We have South Beach and the coastal condos and the wealthy people, but also a lot of poverty. What can be done to enlarge the middle class and give them a bigger share of the pie?
Well, it gets back to the drivers. One of the drivers, the key drivers, is the economy. It was not rated as one of the highest nationally, nor here in Miami, but when you think about it, the economy is fundamental to any location sustainability. And certainly the economy was studied very carefully as part of this particular report. And the crossover between the economy and education and openness and some of those key crossovers, I think, are some of the more interesting parts of the report. But disparity is an issue here. The data shows that.
Is it greater here than the other cities studied? Or?
Well, the other studies, the other cities, I should say, once again, they were studied strictly in terms of a survey of perceptions. What our study did, what the Miami Foundation's effort involved, was to actually create community indicators where we could actually measure that. So those perceptions were now looked at in terms of reality, what was really happening in terms of objective measures that we could actually analyze, but also begin to update on an annual basis and begin to benchmark Miami against other cities throughout the country.
And we've
looked at the country as a whole, and we looked at the state of Florida at this level. Obviously, this is the first year with the indicators were put in place. A lot of work goes into that. But the disparity is significant here, particularly between white, non-Hispanic, Latino households and Hispanic, Latino households or black households. The disparity is quite significant, and that came out in the study, and it was one of the issues that obviously the city and the county would need to address going forward. For instance, the median household income here in Miami-Dade in 2010 was $42,157. For white non-Hispanics, it was $62,863. But if you look at Hispanic Latinos, $39,701, and for black non-Hispanic households, $33,071. So that disparity is quite significant, and that came out in a number of other indicators that we looked at in education and in the economy.
Javier Soto, the Beacon Council is a part of this program, and they supposedly have the energy to kind of jumpstart economies. What can be done to jumpstart ours here in South Florida?
Well, that's right. Beacon Council is a partner of ours in a number of different things, including in this project. We participated in their One Community, One Goal project, and we see it as a joint effort where Beacon Council is leading on the economic aspects of what creates a more vibrant community. And we're more focused on what's termed the placemaking aspect, creating a place that is attractive to people to start their businesses, to locate here, raise their families here. So creating a place that addresses the mobility challenges, that has attractive green spaces, that has a walkability that makes you feel comfortable leaving your home and walking to the corner store. Those types of things are things that we will be focused on working in conjunction with Beacon Council around the broader issues of economic planning, et cetera. You know, I do want to go back to the middle class question that you asked a minute ago, and we tie this very directly to education and feel like, in particular, college attainment rates are a key driver in moving the needle on shrinking the inequality that we absolutely have in our community. We do rank, Bonnie, back to your question about how we rank vis-a-vis other places, far below a place like Philadelphia, for example, almost by half in terms of our college attainment rate. That is, how many people in the community have a college degree. We lag far behind places like Philadelphia. And as a community, for our future, we really need to address that in a significant way.
And yet we have so many excellent universities.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point, which is why we talk about talent development, getting our talented people through college, but also talent retention. Those folks who right now are at the many colleges that we have down here, we actually rank 7th in the country in number of college students in a community. Most people don't know that. We need to do a better job of keeping that talent here, and then recruiting folks from other places who perhaps have never been here, but perhaps went to Coral Gables Senior High or Hialeah Miami Lakes High, and now find themselves at Brown or Harvard or Georgetown. We need those folks to come back home and feel like, yes, they can get a job here, but also it's a place that they can identify with, they feel comfortable in, and they know that they can raise a family in.
What is the $500,000, this grant money that's being given out, and how is it going to be allocated?
So we're developing a process now for taking the research that was conducted by FIU and Knight Foundation and finding strategies to invest some of the money that the Miami Foundation invests every year in the community to the tune, in this case, of $500,000 in a way that helps to drive this attachment, that helps to create a more vibrant place, a place that is more likely to retain and recruit young talent. That will probably be released later this year, early into next year. But the strategies will be around creating a place that is attractive to young talent, helping to develop our talent and raise that college attainment rate. So putting resources in the hands of folks here, talented young folks in Miami who perhaps otherwise wouldn't be able to go through college. So those are some of the goals and some of the strategies that we would employ with that $500,000 project. But in next week, we will be announcing a series of grants around $200,000 on the affordable housing piece. Thanks to the generosity of a woman named Constance Dundas, who lived in Miami a long time ago, had a passion for Miami, and left money to the Miami Foundation to invest in the affordability issue and affordable housing in particular. So next week we will be announcing that series of grants, again tying into the need to create a more affordable community based on the research that we've done that will attract, retain young, talented folks in Miami.
Let's take a quick telephone call. We have Jacob in Miami. Hello, Jacob. Hi.
Hi. Great topic. I actually was calling in, but I was listening to what you guys were discussing, and I think it's great. I'm a young professional that just finished graduate school, and I've noticed that as far as incentives for keeping young professionals here, there's really not a lot. There's not a lot of industry down here. And what industry there is usually the customer service industry, hotel jobs and restaurant jobs. And I think when you were talking earlier about jump-starting the economy, I've noted myself and friends of mine that have come to visit me that are from other states in the United States that the customer service down here is just so low. There's a lot of rudeness. And you just don't get the quality of customer service I feel like you get in other places. And I feel like a shift towards improving that would definitely improve the quality of, you know, the kind of work that's done down here and make it a more inviting place for people who want to come visit.
I've been around long enough to remember the Miami Nice Project. Remember that, Dr. Murray?
Yes. Well, Jacob's question actually gets to one of the key crossover points that I had mentioned earlier between the economy and education. In fact, one of the indicators that we're looking at are the degrees that are being offered by our universities. By the way, our universities did receive high grades bought by the Miami respondents to the Gallup survey. And so with the degrees that are being offered, we can actually begin to cross over to the economic side of the to the equation and look at, well, where are the jobs in these creative class types of industries, and where are those potential opportunities for graduating young students that can get jobs in various occupations that have those. Present those opportunities. Areas such as education and healthcare are two of the areas where there's significant growth over the past few years. International finance and banking is another creative class core occupation that we were able to cite in the study. So these are some of the measures, some of the indicators that the project allows us to analyze on an annual basis.
I was going to ask Jacob if he had stayed on. I wanted to ask him if he was planning on staying here. You know, he said he was a young professional and just graduated graduate school, and just wondering what the statistics are when you say that a lot of them leave. What are the actual statistics on that?
Well, actually, we have statistics in terms of graduation rates, which are fairly good. Here in Miami, about 85%, which is a little bit below the national average, but pretty good. Our retention rates are pretty good. But the question that we don't have hard evidence is, where do they go? How do we retain them? Well, we can only retain them once we can truly show that we can diversify the economic base with these various core creative class occupations. And so that's one thing that the that the My Miami project will be looking at in the years to come.
So you mentioned a website. What is the website where our listeners can learn more and get more involved?
It's rmiami.org, and the full report is there. There was an insert in the Miami Herald a couple of weeks ago, but there's a whole lot of data that's all contained in the website, including on issues of civility, which the caller just raised.
Right.
Because that does speak to how welcoming a community is, and there's no question that Miami can do a better job of being a little more welcoming and showing a higher degree of civility. It's something that we're focused on, and we'd like to see improved as well.
I just wonder how you change people's hearts, you know?
I think by attaching people more to this community, you do drive up levels, not only of civic engagement, but even of civility.
We want to thank you, Javier Soto, the president and CEO of the foundation, the Miami Foundation, and also Dr. Ned Murray, the associate director of the Florida International University Metropolitan Center. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Food and Dining is next.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Orchestra Miami begins its stellar sixth season with an intimate concert at the Coral Gables Museum featuring works by Menotti, Beethoven, and Stravinsky, Sunday, October 28th at 7 p.m. Tickets and information at orchestramiami.org. Every day, children are falling through the cracks, becoming victims of economic hardships like 12-year-old Lindsay, who no one knew existed until paramedics came to rescue her mother. There are many children like Lindsay at Kids in Distress. More information at kidinc.org.
Like Topical Currents Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying. At facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Well, our Thursday food and dining segment has finally arrived. I'm here with chef, author, and syndicated columnist, my longtime colleague, Linda Gassenheimer. And today we have a celebrity chef here, host of Iron Chef America, a new book.
Right. And your happy day.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till you hear the title of the book. Our topic, Joe, is Cook Yourself Sexy. And no, you haven't turned into the wrong station.
So it means oysters or what?
We'll see. According to our guest, Candice Kumai, sexy isn't in your closet. It's in your kitchen. Candice is a regular on the Food Network's Iron Chef America. She's a food TV personality. She's on Cooking Channel's Unique Eats. Cook Yourself Sexy, easy, delicious recipes for the hottest, most confident you. That's the title of her new book.
And well, I need a little of that, I guess.
That's why you have a big smile on your face, because she's here in the studio. Welcome, Candice Kumai.
Thank you so much, Linda and Joe. What an introduction. I don't know whether to blush or crack up,
well, you
to
are
be quite
red
honest.
You are very red in your face. I could see that. Also, with us later in the program is our favorite wine columnist, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Let's go straight to Candice Kumai. Quite a title. What are you trying to tell us? What's your message here?
Well, Cook Yourself Sexy really is about confidence building. And I think a lot of women lack confidence in the kitchen. And for all the years I've been in this industry, I've found I get the most gratification from helping others. And I said, okay, look, it's not about being thin anymore, as I was on a series and wrote part of a book called Cook Yourself Thin at one point. And then I went on to Pretty Delicious, which was my first solo book. I said, it's not about being thin anymore. And it's not certainly not about being pretty, because being thin and being pretty will get you nowhere. But being sexy is certainly a mindset. And being sexy typically means you're confident, you feel hot, you look good. If you look good, you typically feel good. So I came up with a theory that sexy was never in your closet. It wasn't about what you wore. It wasn't about what you put on in the morning. It's sexy is simply a mindset and a feeling. And I really wanted to inspire women to cook better, to eat better, to nurture their families again. So it's really going back to our roots, which is what brings me to Miami. I am the ambassador of a program called Giving Through Growing, and it's sponsored in part by Woodbridge Wines by Robert Mondavi. And what we do is we planted over 5 gardens across the U.S. this year, giving out over $55,000 in grants to, you know, cultivate fresh produce and donate it to those in need. So really,
are you donating? So what is the charity or the garden that you're donating here
okay.
in Miami?
So there is a garden here, and it is the Urban Greenworks Garden in Miami, and they already exist. And what happened was we gave them the grant, and Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi gave them the Giving Through Growing grant. And with that, it was a Kickstarter to create a new garden. And this garden is actually called the Liberty City Women's Patch. So it's right here in Miami.
Patch stands for not patch. Just a patch of garden.
Correct. It's Public Alliance That Cultivates Hope. So these women have sort of, and not just women, I'm sure that there are plenty of people there, but what they wanted to do was really spread the message, you know, and say, look, we're going to start from the ground up here. This is the first time that's actually happened, which is why Miami's garden is so unique. We usually,
There's 20,000 square feet. That's huge.
Yes, yes.
That's huge.
It's only a few miles from the station, actually.
Right, which is why you should go take a visit too, Joe.
I will.
So it's a feel-good program. It's an amazing way for us to reach out to those in the community. And as I said, it's not necessarily about bringing it back to being sexy. It's really about bringing back the old, you know, ways that, you know, our grandmother ate and how she cultivated her own food. And, you know, my father's side of the family, they were farmers. And so I'm typically going back to what my grandmother did, not to that extent. I don't work with cows and chickens as she did, but I certainly love going out to the garden, clipping off some, you know, mesclun greens, or maybe last week we were in Atlanta and we clipped off some Swiss chard and then straight from the garden right to the pan to the table.
A lot
and
of kids eat French fries, but they probably don't even know the potatoes grow on
right.
the ground.
Absolutely. You're correct.
That's
unfortunate.
Right. And what I think, so what your message really is, you know, get back to basics. Eat right, feel healthy, and feel good about yourself.
Absolutely.
And then you'll be sexy.
Absolutely. And that's and that's the formula. That's it. Perfect.
Okay.
There's even hope for me.
There you go, Joe. Sexy in the kitchen, Joe Cooper. All right. So, well, let me ask you a question about talking about Joe and all. Do you get more feedback from men or from women? About this
is a great question, too, Linda. You know, whenever I judge Iron Chef, I typically do get emails from men. This is weird to talk about, by the way, for me, because I actually think I'm a big geek. And then
you're pretty hot, actually.
Thanks. Okay.
I'm sorry this is in television, but the both of them are beet red.
You two are adorable. Okay. So then, but with women, they write to me about my recipes and my books. So there's a difference. Women are taking the content that I write and they're responding to my message. And men are typically just, as men do, looking at me on a screen saying, "Ooh, whoa, she's really hot." And then they write to me. So there's a big difference between the relationship I have with women and with men in the media.
Okay.
I feel like a Neanderthal here.
Okay, well, you guys are.
Let's talk about, you talk about in your book, it's called Real Foods, and it's called Stop Faking It, Start Making It.
Right.
How does this help?
Well, it's about time that people realize. So I write about foods with benefits. I call them FWBs. They're in every book of mine. They're at the very top column underneath the serving size. And if you're, say you're cooking the sexy Swiss chard, for instance, that was in Pretty Delicious. You're going to get an FWB out of the lemon, out of the Swiss chard, out of the onions, out of the pumpkin seeds, out of the golden raisins. Every single ingredient in that recipe contains foods with benefits. And even if it's a recipe with chocolate, it doesn't matter because chocolate is a food with benefit. If you're,
what do you mean by food with benefit?
It basically means if you consume it, it will give back to you. So if you're eating chocolate, you're getting antioxidants. You're getting feel-good chemicals are being released. If you're eating spinach, you're getting vitamins A, C, K. You're getting iron. You're getting something back from what you're consuming. So if it's a bag of, you know, chips, like nacho cheese chips, all I'm going to get from that is jiggly arms and a depressed, you know, rest of my day. And I don't want
and
either
those
of those.
And those aren't sexy.
Not at all. Exactly. And I actually talk about a section in Cook Yourself Sexy that's called 7 Days to Sexy. And it's simply a kickstart program that talks about how, you know, even overconsumption of going out and eating, you know, bad food or having an unhealthy weekend, none of that is sexy. So if you want to feel and look your best, you absolutely should and can cook yourself sexy.
Okay. Well, I love the titles of some of your recipes. Skinny dip in the sea. Lemon caper salmon with Greek yogurt. What's this about?
Okay, so skinny dip in the sea is the chapter for seafood. You know, I wanted to be clever with these and tasteful at that. And tasteful can be used in more ways than one. I do say that life should always be full of good taste. And if you can take simple ingredients like lemons, capers, salmon, just Greek yogurt, they're all in your fridge already. You can make some
Hopefully.
Of the most.
Hopefully.
Right, right. I'm getting there. You're right.
Okay.
We're getting
there.
I
have capers in my refrigerator.
Joe, I'm not coming over to your house unless you have these other ingredients here. Okay, so the point is you can absolutely use all of these simple base ingredients and turn them into something phenomenal. I cooked on the line, you know, for a couple of years, namely at the Ritz-Carlton in Laguna Beach.
By cooking on the line, you mean in a professional
kitchen?
Right,
in a professional kitchen, correct. And what we did was I worked in banquets and special events and for VIP parties. So I not only saw, tasted, touched, felt every single thing that was full fat, high fat, and being served to the best of the best, I sort of took from that and said, wait a minute, we can cook gourmet at home. So why not be able to duplicate some of these same recipes, but make them a bit healthier? Because we all know when we go out to eat, we're indulging a bit. And I love my restaurant chefs, so I'd never, you know, say don't go out to eat. I'm just saying when you're at home, you know, 75% of the time, then cook good food.
Right. Good food is important.
Yeah.
But what I saw here is you have a size zero cake.
Oh.
A size zero cake. So what's in that?
You're so cute, Linda. That is my favorite cake in the world. I actually wrote that recipe because I love bananas and I love banana bread. So a couple years ago, I came up with a recipe for like basically a chocolate chip cookie that was made with bananas. And it was the most popular dessert recipe and pretty delicious. So the next book, I said I have to one up my last book. So why not come out with a banana cake with a hazelnut chocolate frosting?
And this is going to make you a zero?
It
what,
sure
you're going
will.
To have a one-inch piece? I mean, what is this?
What it is it's made, half of the butter is taken out and mashed banana is put in. So you're getting more nutrients, more flavor, same amount of moisture, less fat. So you certainly can't eat the whole thing or half and expect to be a size zero. But you can certainly eat a very generous piece and not feel guilty after eating.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is Iron Chef Judge Candice Kumai. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
This is 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. We're funded by listeners like you and by Life Policy Payout Program. With the program, you or someone you know can dispose of an unwanted or unneeded life insurance policy for a lump sum payment. Qualifications and more details at lifepolicypayout.com. We're also funded by SunTrust, committed to helping you take the next step toward financial well-being. More information at suntrust.com/shine.
This week at O Cinema, How to Survive a Plague, the story of the brave young people whose activism reversed the tide of the AIDS epidemic. Also screening Samsara, a visually stunning work spanning 5 continents. Details at o-cinema.org.
We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Candice Kumai. She's a regular judge on Food Network's Iron Chef America, and she's a food TV personality for the cooking channel's Unique Eats. Her new book is, are you ready? Cook Yourself Sexy, Easy, Delicious Recipes for the Hottest, Most Confident You. And she's been giving us some wonderful cooking tips and telling us about a very special project at the Liberty City Women's Patch, that's Public Alliance that Cultivates Hope. And it's been terrific. But right now, it's dinner in minutes
All
time.
Right.
Okay.
Have time.
Yeah, I saw you ate everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah? You had a good lunch today, Joe?
Indeed.
Right? It's fish.
It's always good from you, Linda.
Oh, you just want lunch next week. Mm-hmm. It's snapper Veracruz with quick rice. So, olives, capers, peppers, and cinnamon are typical flavors used in dishes from Veracruz, Mexico. And for this fish, I just sautéed snapper fillets, but you could use any kind of fish fillet. About 2 minutes per side. That's for a half-inch fillet.
I remove. You don't want to overcook fish ever.
No, because you know what? It continues to cook in its own heat when it gets off the skillet. Right. So I removed the fish from the skillet, and I added some onions, green bell pepper, garlic, onions, capers, tomato, and something called a banana pepper. And we had that on the program a while ago. It's banana pepper is it's kind of a yellow-white pepper. It's long, but really you could
sort
use
of medium-hot.
Medium-hot.
Yeah.
But you can use any kind of chili pepper if you want. Sauté the vegetables for about 5 minutes. Return the fish to the skillet for just a minute to warm through, and serve it with the vegetables on top. Now for the side dishes, really, really simple, because I used microwavable brown rice. And just follow directions for the brown rice. Serve about half to three quarters of a cup of rice per person. So the recipe, it's in the Miami Herald. Go to dinnerinminutes.com, click the columns tab for a direct link. And also, please follow me, that's on Twitter, at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
The publicity for Candace's book says she knows nothing is sexier than rocking a gorgeous body and enjoying your food.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in my case, I once told a friend I had Sean Connery's body, and he said, well, give it back. You're getting it all stretched out.
We know better than that.
Still, no comment wine. Here, Fred.
I appreciate that. Still, wine is healthy for you if you do it right. A ton of Ivy League studies say it thins the blood, helps fight heart attacks and a dozen other diseases, which seems too good to be true, and actually it probably is if you do it wrong.
Ivy League? What is that?
Well, Harvard, Yale, that sort of thing, Princeton. Everybody, all the medical schools have done studies on this, and they all agree that especially red wine is, in moderation, is good for you.
Oh, I was worried it was the students giving us this advice. Thanks.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Anyway, the medical studies all say that wine's benefits can be expressed in a graph with a J curve. So what you do, you picture the letter J, and if you don't drink, your disease risk is at the top of the shorter left leg of that J. And if a man has a couple of glasses of wine a day, his risk goes down to the bottom of that J. If he has four glasses, he's back up the right leg of the J about as high as he was when he didn't drink. And beyond that, he travels up that right leg very rapidly until he reaches, I don't know, death or something. In terms of calories, a 5-ounce glass of wine, either red or white, is about 120 calories. And here's a tip. Champagne, which uses grapes that are less ripe and thus have less sugar, has about 100 calories.
So, I knew you'd come in with a champagne somewhere, yeah, Fred.
It's in its place.
Of course.
And, of course, they're all better than a 12-ounce regular cola, which has 136 calories. Now, the problem with this, though, is that wine makes you hungry to the point that some nursing homes actually give a glass of wine before meals as an appetite stimulant to people who have trouble eating. So, as artists Aristotle, Ben Franklin, and your mother always told you, moderation in all things. Don't you just hate moderation?
Mm-hmm. I guess you do, Fred. Thanks so much. Well, leave it to Fred. Mm-hmm. Leave it to Fred. Okay.
I'm trying to figure out that J thing again. But whatever.
It's complicated. You need a glass of wine to go with it. Then you'll be able to figure it out. Okay, so Candice Kumai, you mentioned how to cook with 5 ingredients in your book, Cooking Yourself Sexy. So what do you mean? What are some examples of 5 ingredients?
Well, I think that you should just, I typically talk about cooking with simple ingredients, you know, versus it doesn't just have to be 5 ingredients. It could be just having pantry staples. So I have diagrams in the book because we know that everybody likes visuals versus a list, which is just boring. So I took overhead shots of what's in my pantry and what's in my fridge. And I'm sharing that with everybody now so they can see, here's what I eat. I'm not lying. I'm just pulling exactly what we have out of my fridge and we're shooting it so that everyone's aware of basics.
Now, what are they? Tell us.
Oh, well, there's so many, but if we had to go off of what I use the most, I always have olive oil, extra virgin particularly. Mm-hmm. I always have a great sea salt. I always have fresh lemons on hand. And with those, you can make an incredible dressing or marinade right off the bat. I use a lot of soy sauce in my cooking, and it's probably from my Japanese heritage. And I love sriracha, like hot sauce, the rooster sauce in Vietnamese cooking. And those are really things I keep, you know, in my pantry, and I utilize all that. And I just love heat. I don't know what it is.
So cayenne, sort of like hot sauce. Keep all those condiments that
I
you
think to have someone take pictures of my refrigerator. The moldy celery. And
do you have anything in it for Joe?
Yeah, but you know what? I interchange those five staples quite a bit, depending on the season, depending on what I'm cooking, the holidays. You know, say it's the holiday time, there's always pumpkin spice, and I'm using it in everything.
Give us an example.
Oh, pumpkin spice I use in my coffee. So in the morning, I put it in my coffee grinds, and then I just pour the hot water over, and you have this essence of fall in your home. Or if I'm making cookies, I'm always going to put extra pumpkin spice, especially in the holidays, or cakes, or, you know, a loaf of bread. And I even like, you know, fresh nutmeg in my pasta and such like that, too.
Okay, well, that sounds really, really delicious. I never thought of putting it into the coffee afterwards.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So that's terrific. Well, you know, Candice Kumai, you're a great rep for your own advice. You are a fashion model. And then you're a cordon bleu chef. You're named Best Dressed Chefs of 2012 by Daily Meal. But you're involved with food all the time, and you said you cook down the line. And all
what
that.
What a catch she'd be.
Oh, boy. I know. It's like I'm just too busy to go down that road right now. But no, I thank you. I appreciate
it. So what's your advice? How do you keep this great, shall we say, physique?
Right, the physique and the svelte figure, if you will.
Okay, great.
It's all balance, and I love, you know, what we were speaking about earlier with everything in moderation, and that includes eating. I eat everything on Iron Chef that's served to me, and then sometimes the next day I've got to go do a photo shoot. So really, I sort of balance and moderate everything. If I went out with my girlfriends and ate, you know, a 7-course meal at Marc Four Guillaume's in the city and had all the champagne in the world that my heart desired and dessert, then you better believe the next day I'm going to eat really fresh.
Do you just taste or do you eat?
No, I absolutely eat. Mm-hmm. And my friends will all attest to that. My parents will too. I grew up with a mom who very much cooked very healthy, not just because of her heritage in Japanese culture, but because she wanted to nurture my sister and I so that we could actually share her Japanese ways with, you know, my sister is also a public figure and an activist in London, and she works with cycling and bicycling, but mine is in food, obviously. So I nurture those around me and say, hey, you know, you should stop eating this processed food and really switch over to something a bit more substantial. You know, mm-hmm. Foods with benefits, it goes back to that.
So you do pig out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's happy to hear that.
I'm really glad you are, because I wouldn't be human if I didn't say I talk about it in the book. I'm telling you, I talk about how everyone has that moment where they've rolled over in bed in the morning and said, oh my goodness, I can't believe I ate all that yesterday. And I often in this book, especially because it's Cook Yourself Sexy, refer to food and dating as very similar parallels in life, especially for the 20s to 40s female who is really in search of finding herself, which is sort of why this book is a bit more grown up than the last book.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Very interesting, very delicious. Thank you so much. It's been a really interesting and very tasty.
Gosh, thank you.
I'd like to have a slice of that banana cake.
Right. Candice Kumai, thank you so much for joining us and for the great tips.
Oh, yes. And I have to say, if you are interested in the program and going to your garden, if you go to woodbridgewines.com/garden, you can check out all the gardens we've been to, LA, New York, Dallas, Miami, Atlanta, and you can see, you know, all the fresh produce that we're donating. It's an incredible program.
Okay, well, that's great. And the Liberty City one, especially here, they're going to be growing the food there, 20,000 square feet.
Yes.
And they're going to be giving that food to various charities once they've grown it there. So that's very wonderful. Joseph Cooper, great to be with you.
Enjoyed the fish.
And great advice from Fred Tasker, as always. Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll be talking with Maricel Priscilla and all about Latin cuisine. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for listening today. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical supervision by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary with production assistance. You can follow us on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Lots of info, including staff photos and discussion. We also have free audio archives and MP3 downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. And today's calendar, on this day in 1400, 612 years ago, the death of author, alchemist, and astronomer Geoffrey Chaucer. He's the first poet laid to rest in Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey. Chaucer is derived from the French word for shoemaker. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Also, on this day in 1881, 131 years ago, the birth of art pioneer Pablo Picasso in Malaga, Spain. He spent most of his adult life in France. He died in 1973. Three dancers, Guernica. And one more before we nuke a healthy choice dinner. On this day in 1955, 57 years ago, the Tappan Company introduces the first microwave oven for home use. World War II radar technology was adapted for its operation. The first countertop microwave was available in 1967 by Manna. Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. We leave with a thought from Pablo Picasso, who painted in a realistic manner through his childhood and adolescence, then became abstract in the 1920s. Quote from Picasso, "It took me 4 years to paint like Raphael, but a lifetime to paint like a child." This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
You're listening to 91.3 WLRN and HD1 Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Palm Beaches, and 91.5 WKWM and HD1 Marathon, Key West. Talk of the Nation on the way in just a moment. We're funded by listeners like you and by Bechtel Jewelers, a third-generation, family-owned and operated fine jewelry store serving South Florida since 1930. Located at 226 Datura Street in West Palm Beach, BechtelJewelers.com.
Today on the Florida Roundup, it's Boca Raton's week in the spotlight, hosting the final presidential